This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sam Monson is one of our favorites when he has time to join us, and he's doing that right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Sam's been with PFF pretty much from the jump as its lead analyst at PFF underscore Sam on X, on Twitter. So we'll get to the quarterbacks because it's exhausting. It's like it's 4/5 of the show for about 3 months, quarterbacks. I actually want to ask you about the first round of this draft in general. You know how teams will say, we actually only had 20 players with actual first round grades. I don't even know if you guys have done this, but when you look at this draft, how many players actually have first round grades, would you guess?
Yeah, I think that's generally speaking how it works. And part of the reason why you get the way the drafts unfold is because every team has a different number of those players or a different sequence of those players. They might have 20 players of the first round grade, but there'll be a different 20 to another team. And so you end up with the first round getting populated that way. I think it's in that kind of ballpark. We're talking about 21, 22 players with that sort of first round grade. And then there are players that you start feeling a little bit uneasy about if you have to draft them in the first round.
Do you feel the same way others do, that because of the COVID year and because of NIL, that this is not a strong draft on the back half because, you know, roughly 75 players that would have been drafted aren't in the draft?
Yeah, I think a lot of players went back to college. And then there's a lot of players that are a year, you know, deeper into their college careers than you typically find. And generally speaking, the NFL doesn't like that. You know, that was seen as a negative thing. If a guy played deep into his college career, if he had five seasons in college, now you're getting these guys that are have been in college for 6 years. So they're older prospects that haven't necessarily dominated at the college level. And these are all things that have been negatively associated in the draft process for years, but the landscape is changing and they might actually need to just embrace these players as what is available now. So I think it's definitely not a deep draft in most positions because you know, the day three depth largely seemed to go back to college. I think it remains to be seen whether that's going to be the way the landscape is from now on or whether that was just a kind of one-year aberration.
So what do you think of the first, let's just say, three rounds, the first two nights where Washington has six picks in the top 100? Is this a strong year or not?
I think it's strong in certain positions. You know, it's an all-time good wide receiver class, and that seems to be something that we're saying almost every single year. But I think it remains true. You know, the caliber and volume of wide receivers coming out of college football right now is crazy and shows no sign of letting up. And this is a draft class that's sort of headlined by three absolute superstars at that position as well. So it's got the star power and the depth at the wide receiver position. And I think there's a couple of other positions that are deep as well. There are some others where the depth evaporates a lot more quickly, and it isn't that level of elite class.
While we're on this, because I want to go back to, and we'll get to the quarterbacks and what you think Washington should do here in a moment, but which are those areas that you think the depth of the position runs out fastest?
I mean, I think it's there are some positions where the depth runs out quickly, and then there are some positions where just the elite players or the guys that you're super confident in runs out quickly. So, you know, I think players like edge rusher, there's maybe three or four guys at the top of this draft that are real stars. And then you run out of guys that you're really confident in quite quickly. But I think at that point, once you get to the next wave, it is quite deep. There's quite a lot of edge rushers that I think are going to be drafted in those first couple of rounds. But there's a gap. There's this sort of tier drop off between that top tier guys and then the next group. And there's a couple of positions like that where there's a very sort of defined top tier of players and then a gap and then the depth starts to kick in.
Who are the three or four edge rushing stars, do you believe?
I think Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, and Laiatu Latu are certainly the three guys. And then I think Chop Robinson probably deserves to be in that conversation as well. He's maybe not quite as clean a prospect as those other three, but definitely has some real elite high-level pass rushing ability and probably deserves to have separated himself from the next group.
I love, and I've watched a lot more of it here recently, I love Latu from UCLA. Is there any concern about his health?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so it's difficult to parse that from the outside. You know, he had a neck injury that had caused him to be medically retired previously. He transferred, obviously, to UCLA. Now, since that time, he played rugby and had two seasons, like fully healthy seasons of extensive work at UCLA. So at the minimum, the neck injury is not a short-term concern. It's something that he's played through, that he's played a lot through, and has not held him back once he got past the point of being medically retired. The concern is if that is something that is going to be a long-term, you know, degenerative reason that his NFL career gets shortened. I mean, we were talking about this on our show recently. There was an offensive tackle the Chargers drafted years ago called Marcus McNeil, who was dealing with a back injury that sounded kind of similar where, you know, he'd had a back injury in college. I think they had diagnosed him with a sort of narrow spinal canal. And this was known at draft time that it was going to be something that shortened his career. He would not be, you know, a 10-year NFL starter. You might get him for 6, 7, 8 years. You don't know. And that was the gamble. And that became the sort of discussion is, well, how high do you draft the guy that we think is really good but is going to have a shorter career than other players? And that might be the conversation that Latu is dealing with. You know, he, I think, is by far the most polished of the pass rushers. He's been the most productive, and he's a better athlete than people thought he was when he got to the testing. But if you are dealing with a question of how high can you draft a guy if you think you'll only get one contract out of him before this neck injury starts to actually curtail his NFL career, or it might not, you know, be a factor at all. So, you know, I think that's the conversation that's happening with each medical staff and each team.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, you know, John Allen, when Washington drafted him in 2017, the reason he dropped was this, I think I'm going to remember this correctly, it was an arthritic concern in his neck and shoulder. And it turns out, you know, he's been fine and he's been healthy and he's been a really good player. And then the other guy, Montez Sweat, you remember when he came out, Washington traded back into the first round, Sam, to take him after they took Haskins at 15. And the reason he was there, there were cardiac and heart-related concerns. I'm trying to think of, like, some of the all-time injury concerns and how it played out in the pros. I was just thinking of those two off the top of my mind. Do any come to your mind?
Yeah, it's difficult. I forget. Somebody else was sent home from the combine with a heart issue. Was it Maurice Hurst? Somebody like that was sent home from the combine when they detected something, and it ended up not being a problem going forward. But I think the other thing is, even if you worked on the basis that he's a one contract player, if he's good enough, it's worth taking in the first round. You know, you're not necessarily getting him beyond one contract anyway. You're going to have to re-up him at whatever price it is. So, you know, it's not a guarantee that you can keep this guy around, even if he is a really good player and that the medical injuries or the medical issues aren't a factor going forward. So I think sometimes teams should probably look at this like, you know, if we only get one contract out of him, even if he is, or if he is as good as we think he is, it's worth taking that guy high in the first round.
That's interesting. But it makes sense, actually. We're talking to Sam Monson. So I promise we're going to get to Sam's quarterback stuff, but we just have obsessed on that so much. And having you on, I want to talk about some other things, especially from a PFF standpoint. When you guys sit around and get ready for a draft, who do you really respect? Like, which teams really do this the best from a PFF standpoint?
I think the league generally has gotten an awful lot better at drafting. I think they've gotten better at doing most things, actually. One of the benefits, I think, of sort of data and analytics and all these kinds of things is everyone focuses on, you know, the fourth down decisions and all the kind of stuff in game. But actually, it's just given them a much better idea of basic principles to stick to and at least understanding what the framework should look like if and when you want to go outside of the boundary. So I think most teams now are kind of operating within the margins most of the time, and you don't tend to see these teams go completely off the reservation and just have those drafts that used to exist where, you know, guys were getting drafted. Like the Raiders had a couple of drafts like this when John Gruden and Mike Mayock were in charge. And it's like that draft just bears no resemblance to any other draft board, you know? And even if you're right, which they weren't most of the time, but even if you were getting the players correct, you're not playing the game well because you're missing out on so much sort of surplus value by drafting these guys rounds ahead of where anybody else had them listed. I don't think teams are really doing that anymore. There's really not too many instances of teams being just so completely out in their own thing. So I think a lot of teams are operating, you know, on a fairly sort of standard operating system and then deviating here or there when the conversations are not black and white. You know, whether it's Minnesota looking to trade up and get a quarterback, whether it's New England thinking about trading down, whether it's Arizona, the Chargers thinking about trading down. Like, these are not black and white yes or no answers. These are, it depends on your ranking of the quarterback, on your ranking of the other quarterbacks, on what the trade offer on the table is. And it's a balancing act of all these things. And it's going to come down 55-45 in one direction or the other. And so I think that's kind of where the NFL is these days.
I think that's interesting because, you know, what you're speaking to, and I think everybody followed it, is that drafts from the outside looking in were always evaluated on, did they actually pick the player where the player was supposed to go, or did they get value because they drafted that player that was ranked higher later? But it was, I think what you're almost saying, and you can say it another way or correct me if I'm wrong, but you're almost implying that it's become less subjective than it used to be.
Well, I think teams have just understood what the framework is to operate it. Like, nobody is making the Ricky Williams trade anymore, right? That was a trade that was objectively bad. It didn't need hindsight to happen. It was terrible process, and there's no possible scenario where that could have been a good move, even if Ricky Williams had ended up being, you know, the next Walter Payton, the next best running back of all time. It was a terrible trade. Nobody's doing that anymore because they understand that, and they understand sort of where the lines are in terms of what's way too far. And, you know, like I said, the decisions that are being made are these 55, 45, 60, 40 type of deals where it's close. Nobody is making these moves anymore where it's the kind of trade or the kind of deal, the kind of move that would get vetoed in a fantasy league. They're just not really happening in today's NFL because everybody has raised their baseline understanding of what the guardrails are and what the general boundaries are of what's too much.
All right, let's get to Washington. First of all, what is your impression of the new group here, of Adam Peters, Lance Newmark, Dan Quinn, etc.?
Yeah, I like what they've been doing, broadly speaking. I think they've hired a lot of smart people. I think they've done it in a coherent manner. You can sort of see the approach. You can see a constant thread throughout what they're doing. It's not randomized. It's not scattershot. And now everything comes down to the quarterback situation, comes down to which guy they end up picking.
All right, let's get there. Caleb Williams goes number one to Chicago. Washington's on the clock. You're the general manager. Who do you take?
Yeah, it's tough. There's each one of these guys, when you go through this draft, I think initially it seemed like it was Caleb Williams versus Drake May for the number one overall pick. And then the more everybody dove into it, the more it was Caleb Williams with the clear number one pick. And actually Drake May is in a group of other quarterbacks, and each one of these guys has got something to scare you about their game. With Drake May, it's, you know, he just misses way too many of these layups, these easy throws. And that line, you know, misses too many layups, is in almost every scouting report you're going to see, or any anonymous, you know, scouting analysis of Drake May. It's true. It's part of his game. And the question becomes, why is it there and can we fix it? Or also just how big of a problem is it? And that's another kind of debate. Jaden Daniels, you know, he's got a few little concerns or little negatives, I guess, on the profile. Number one, it took him a long time to get to where he is, and we're only really dealing with one high-level season of play. Number two, that season came when he's throwing to multiple first-round wide receivers. That's absolutely a factor. And number three, he, for his career, has had a really concerning and kind of problematic sack rate or pressure to sack rate, the amount of pressure plays that he takes that result in sacks. And generally speaking, that is a very quarterback-driven data point that translates well to the NFL, i.e. he's going to be that same guy in the NFL. And the list of quarterbacks that have a really bad pressure to sack rate is a very bad list of NFL quarterbacks and Joe Burrow. So it's not that you can't succeed with that kind of style of play. It just makes it very difficult. It gives you a very small target to stick that landing. And then JJ McCarthy's issues are just a real lack of tape. You know, he didn't have the same responsibilities and requirements as these other guys. He was on a dominant national champion team that didn't need or want him to throw the football as much as these other guys. And so we just haven't seen a high enough sample size of him being put in those situations, which doesn't mean he can't do it, but means it's a projection. And we don't know what happens if you suddenly ramp up those requirements and ask him to carry the offense a lot more. It's a very different pressure on a guy, knowing that if he makes a mistake, that could be the game already versus at Michigan. If he makes a mistake, he'll know the defense is probably going to hold. He can come back next drive and do it all over. Somebody like Caleb Williams knew that if he didn't hit 40 points, they weren't winning the game.
Jaden Daniels and Drake May too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a very
different... all three of them played with three of the worst. I mean, LSU's defense was truly the worst, in the SEC and one of the worst in the country. But yes, I want to come back to the pressure to sack rate on Jaden Daniels in a moment. But real quickly on Drake May, you didn't answer the question. Who would you pick?
I would pick Drake May. I think it's easier to. It's easier to explain away his negatives. I think he's being more negatively impacted by his environment than any of the other quarterbacks we're talking about. And he was still playing at a level that was extremely high. I mean, his PFF grade is above 90. He had the most big time throws of any of these quarterbacks over the last couple of years. And I think you can definitely talk yourself into cleaning up a lot of his misses. Now, maybe he'll always, when he misses, the misses will always be ugly. You know, he has a tendency to sort of miss bad when he misses. But like, he still, how often does that happen and how big of a problem is it? I think that's the bottom line for him.
I mean, is it fair that I'm hearing from you that you don't think it's as big of a problem, and whether it's footwork or mechanics or whatever, it's fixable?
I think you will fix some of it, and the remaining portion that may be inherent, that may always be there, is probably not as big of an issue as people are going to talk it up to being. I think it looks worse than it actually is because the misses look so bad. You know, it's when a guy misses a receiver by a yard, we're on to the next down. We don't even really think about it. When a guy misses, 5 yards wide and sends it into the stands, it looks ridiculous, and you remember that play. But it's the same play. The same consequence. Either way, he missed and we're on to the next down. And Drake May at least offsets that by an incredible volume of big plays and the capability to do special things.
All right, on Jaden Daniels, first of all, you said something. Do you really think that it was just one season of high-level production? I think from the midpoint of 2022, it's been high-level since.
I think it was predominantly he's been getting better throughout his college career, but I think it's predominantly one season of really elite play. That's certainly when the shifts happened in terms of, a couple of data points. Now, there's some good games midway through that previous season, and his overall performance is pretty good. But I think we're talking fairly night and day the first 4 years of his career versus the last year.
Where do you have him ranked, actually? If you've got, do you have Williams number one?
Yeah, I think Williams is the clear number one. I would take Drake May number two. I think I would probably take Jaden Daniel three.
Okay. So what I was going to say about pressure to sack rate is that his average yards per sack is very low. And I had a conversation with Eric Eager maybe 2 weeks ago about this very thing, that not all sacks are the same, right? I mean, J.J. McCarthy averaged near 8 yards on his sacks. Jaden Daniels was right around 4. So was Drake May. Drake May, by the way, right? Didn't he have a high pressure to sack rate for the most part?
Yeah. But actually, there's very little difference between the two of them if you only look at 2023.
Right.
But we also know that that's a data point that is fairly noisy. It fluctuates year to year, bounces around. And so if you use a larger sample size for Daniels, that's when it jumps significantly higher than a guy like Drake May.
Yeah, my only point was not all sacks are the same, and his average yards per sack was, right around 4, the lowest of any of the quarterbacks. Mays was low too, and the reason is they actually extend a lot and create a lot, and sometimes there weren't a lot of sacks where, especially in 22, where he drops back and just, is overcome with pressure and dropped for a 10-yard loss. And that was my only context to it, is that not all sacks are the same.
No, I agree. But I think part of the running around and extending plays thing is part of the problem. I think sometimes, the quarterback has a tendency to rely on his athleticism too much and essentially invite the problem. And whether or not it's obviously a sort of 10 yard sack is significantly worse than a 1 or 2 yard sack, but the sack itself is the problem. Like, the fact that these plays are turning into negative plays, it's like a running back being tackle behind the line of scrimmage. You know, if he's the architect of too many of those plays, you are putting yourself behind the chains with these negatives, and it takes a lot to dig yourself out of that hole. So it's kind of like the conversation around passing on or running the ball on first and second down. You know, and if you're running, if you your sequence as an offensive play caller is run, run, pass, the quarterback is facing too many of these third and eight plays. And when you think you're protecting him, you're actually making his life more difficult because you are increasing the number of third and long, obvious passing situations when you could have reduced those by actually letting him throw the ball on first down, you know, which seems.
Yeah, no, I get all that. Yeah, I completely get that. And I think that, you know, and from you guys and people like you, we learned over the years, you know, first of all, sacks are as much a quarterback sack, if not more than offensive line sack. But with respect to drive killers, we understand what the number one drive killer is, and that is a big loss via the sack. But a second and 18 situation is different from second and 12. And they were the number one third down offense in the country, and it wasn't even close. And they were also faced the fewest third downs, which means after some of those plays, he was able, with great talent around him, as you pointed out, able to overcome it. I'm going along with you because I love my conversations with you, but I have to ask you about Penix Jr. What do you guys think of him?
I think he's got a lot of talent, and coaches love that guy. He's interesting because in all this data and analysis and tape, there's always an intangible aspect that we don't really have access to, that the coaches in particular do have access to. And that's why they have these, you know, 30 visits and all those kinds of things. And coaches love Michael Penix Jr. Whatever the intangible things are they're looking for, he's got them, because all the way through you'll hear various NFL coaches putting that guy, not just in that top mix, but like ranking him as the third quarterback in the draft or things like that. So I think he's got the arm to make it happen. He showed he's got way more athleticism than he ever really deployed in college. And maybe, you know, scrambling or maybe extending plays can be a bigger part of his game at the NFL level than it was in college. And I don't know that the injuries for him are necessarily a long-term problem. Like, he's been unfortunate with injuries. He's had a few significant injuries that have absolutely hampered his college career, but none of them are necessarily things that are going to be long-term problems or an indication that he's, you know, permanently injury prone. He's just been unfortunate. So if you can look beyond the injuries, I think there's a lot of reasons to think that he can operate an NFL offense at a pretty high level.
All right. You think Washington should take Drake May, assuming Caleb Williams goes one, pretty safe assumption. Who do you think they'll take?
I think they'll end up settling on Drake May. I'm not at all confident in it. You know, the conversation has been a lot about Jaden Daniels. The narrative on Drake May has been overwhelmingly negative throughout the entire process for some reason. And I'm also not entirely sold on the idea that there isn't smoke where there's fire when it comes to the NFL liking J.J. McCarthy more than the public or more right. than the media or more than draft analysts. Like, from day one, there's been that discussion that, be prepared, the NFL likes that guy more than anybody else does. And, you know, he's going to go higher than you think he will. I wouldn't rule out the possibility that J.J. McCarthy goes at number two.
Yeah, interesting. One last one, actually, sorry. Does his frame concern you, or maybe his style, reckless at times, concern you, Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is, he needs to change the way he plays in that regard. Like, there's a Mike Vick element to his game where for his entire career, people were pleading with him to, look, you make special things happen, but come on, we need slide at the end of this play. Like, we need you on the next down. Jaden Daniels takes some of the most ridiculous hits for a guy his size and his ability. Like, he plays the game with this Josh Allen recklessness, only, you know, minus 35 pounds. That can't work at the next level. Like, you need to be more cognizant of protecting yourself.
Yeah, some of that was basically if they had to punt, the other team was scoring seven. You're great. I always love having you on. Enjoy the next couple of days. We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Take it easy.
Sam Monson, everybody from Pro Football Focus, Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.